Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Good evening and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I am Wags, joined alongside by Scott Tobin, fresh from the ballpark. A pretty big week in the world of St. Louis Cardinals sports. And, man, I'm giddy again. Like, I wouldn't say I wasn't giddy during the rest of the season, but for some reason, the reignition of this chase, the Cardinals streaking the way they are against teams like the Yankees and the Cubs. You and I were talking before we came on. There is something special going on right now, and it feels like a different energy down at the ballpark. First off, Scott, how you been? Because it's been a couple weeks since we've gotten a chance to talk, but talk about that energy and how it's kind of just boom back.
Yeah, I'm good, man. It has been a couple of weeks, but it's been a fun couple of weeks. I've gotten to spend pretty much every night at Busch Stadium, and like you and I talked about, the energy, the magic is back at Busch Stadium. I mean, there's just a different feel in that ballpark than there's been. You know, you could go back to 2019 when they went to the NLCS. There wasn't the same feel. There wasn't this feel then. You know, we're probably going back to 2013, 2014, you know, those years when the Cardinals, every year you expected the Cardinals to be in the fight for the World Series. I think there's that kind of energy back in this ballpark, and there's a lot of reason for it. I mean, you know, the Cardinals went out, and even though people weren't thrilled with the moves Mo made at the trade deadline, Mo went and got two pitchers that, I mean, you can't argue. Look what they've done. You know, they're 6-0, and between the two of them, they've won all three of their starts, both of them. And Montgomery and Quintana, since they've joined the team. Wainwright and Michaelis have pitched a lot better. I mean, it's just solidified your starting rotation. It's solidified your bullpen because it's allowed you to put Pallante back in the bullpen. You know, it's made the bullpen better. And then the lineup has rolled for the most part. And, you know, you can talk about Paul Goldschmidt being hot. We can talk about Nolan Arenado being hot. You know, everybody was waiting, saying, okay, we need another hitter in this lineup. Is it going to be Tyler O'Neill? Is it going to be Dylan Carlson? No, it's not going to be either one of those guys, although they're both starting to hit the last week. They're starting to pick it up. You know, Nolan Gorman stepped up and had some huge hits. You know, he's really looked good again. But then you look and somebody turned the page back, man. Are we sure it's 2021? It's starting to feel like 2003, 2004, 2005 because he might be 42 years old. But you walk into that ballpark and you watch Albert Pujols swing, and it takes you back to that, to those days, man, because there's not a thing that's changed about that swing from 20 years ago. He looks like the exact same ball player. And it's been so much fun to watch Albert just go crazy the last couple of weeks.
Well, and he's doing some of this at home as well in front of the home crowds. You know, the record crowds that we saw with the Yankees in town, the fact that you swept them and the Cubs at home. Yeah, you lost 2-3 to the Rockies in Colorado, but I mean, it's Colorado. You're bound to not have some good games up there. But then they bounce back, take 2-3 from the Brewers, including that 2-home run game by Albert on Sunday, which secured the series win. And then you sweep the Rockies at home with the emphatic 13-0 victory today. And you're right. You look at Albert, and it's the same. It's the same thing. It's the swing. He looks invigorated back here in St. Louis. And I think we all knew that was going to be the case when he came back, and he's playing with Yadi, he's playing with Wainwright, he's back home, he's got the fans behind him. You know, you thought there was going to be something there. We talked about this before the season started. We're like, yeah, he's getting where he needs to go. He's going to get to 700 this year. And then, you know, he started off a little slow, got sluggish during the halfway point of the season. He started to get worried, maybe being put in positions that he didn't need to be in as far as the lineup is concerned, maybe getting him exposed a little bit. But as of late, he's been put in those moments where he's going up against the guys he should be going up against, and he's delivering. And it just goes back to that Cardinal double magic that everybody seems to hate outside of St. Louis because, you know, Albert's getting hot. He's starting to, you know, chase down that 700 number. He's closing in on guys like Alex Rodriguez, which I cannot wait for the day he passes A-Rod. But it's not only that, it's, you talked about it. They went out and got the pitching that they needed. They addressed the concern that fans had. Yes, they didn't get Juan Soto, but they did what they needed to do. And now they're winning games in that aspect. And they're winning games. They're three games up on the Brewers right now after the Brewers beat the Dodgers again today, which, you know, Milwaukee's not going to go away very easily. But they're doing everything that they're supposed to right now. And you're adding into that the fact that Albert is doing what he's doing. And it's great. And like you said, too, the rest of the offense is producing as well. So things are going really, really well right now. And it's almost, and you, I think, mentioned it a little bit before we came on, that it's almost like this, all this is getting overlooked in a sense. You know, people are talking about Albert hitting home runs, but they're not really talking about how significant 700 is. They're not talking about how Paul Goldschmidt is going out there and just putting up an amazing MVP caliber season. I mean, I think he's a shoo-in for the MVP. You got Nolan Arenado doing what he's doing. Nolan Gorman has bounced back and produced well. You've still got some hiccups here and there, but for the most part, it's a great team, and yet no one seems to be talking about it.
No, although it's starting to come. The national media is starting to pay a little bit of attention all of a sudden. You know, and that's okay. You know, how many times over the years have the Cardinals been really, really good and nobody's talked about them until you got to postseason? And, you know, we can play, oh, it's the Midwest, it's the chip on our shoulder, it's okay. You know, I don't think those guys mind, because I think this ball club realizes how good they are. I think they're having a whole heck of a lot of fun right now. And, you know, they're just going to keep winning, man. I don't see this falling off, because they're just consistent, and it's different guys coming through with different hits all the time. You know, we talk about Albert today. You know, Albert hit a grand slam and had five RBIs. Seven different guys drove home runs today. It wasn't just Albert. It wasn't just Goldie. I mean, everybody's contributing. It's different guys on different days. You know, Nolan Gorman had a big night last night. Lars Nootbaar hit a home run today. Brendan Donovan went through a little slump where he wasn't hitting. Now all of a sudden he's 9 for his last 16 again and is hitting the ball all over the place. I mean, guys are just stepping up and they're having fun. And I don't know, did you see in the dugout tonight? They showed it on the news, and Ollie Marmol got a huge kick out of it. Yachty got a huge kick out of it. Because Brendan Donovan, poor guy, he went 2 for 2 in his first two at bats today, had an RBI. And then he gets pinch hit 4 for Albert, who steps up and, you know, and the rest of his day hit, goes 2 for 3 and has 5 RBIs. So there were 4 hits and 6 RBIs out of the 2-hole today in the Cardinals lineup. But in about the 7th inning today, Brendan Donovan went down into the locker room and put on a Yachty jersey and came up and grabbed a bat and a helmet, was in the dugout like he was going to go bat again, pretended to be Yachty. And Yachty saw it and grabbed Ollie Marmol. And I think I saw the best reaction I've ever seen out of Ollie Marmol. I mean, his head went back. He was howling. He was laughing so hard as Donovan was swinging a bat in the dugout in Yachty's full uniform. So, I mean, this team is having fun. And, you know, they're starting to roll, man. Like we said, they're three games up on the Brewers. They're 66 and 51 now. So they're 15 games over 500 for the first time all year long. Like I said, they're 13-1 in their last 14 at Busch. You know, they're playing really good baseball, and they're playing really good fundamental baseball. They're not hurting themselves. They're not making errors. Like I said, they're on pace to only make 59 errors as a team this year, which, you know, the team record 64, which happened in 2019, but they're on pace to break that this year. So, I mean, you know, just – they're doing everything right. They're running the bases well. They're playing defense. You know, they're advancing runners. They're hitting with runners in scoring position. They're hitting home runs like crazy all of a sudden. You know, and they're hitting home runs at home, which is something that, you know, we've seen them struggle with the last few years, where they just couldn't score at home because the ball wouldn't travel. All of a sudden, they're hitting the ball out of the ballpark at Busch. You know, and they're getting a lot of extra base hits. They had 7 doubles last night. I think they had 5 more doubles tonight besides the 2 home runs. So, you know, they're getting extra base hits besides just home runs. And, you know, in games when they're not hitting a lot, they're coming through in key moments. You know, we're seeing them get that clutch hit with 2 outs, which they didn't do earlier in the season. We're seeing them find a way to, you know, early in the year, if they were down 2-0 early, it was like, oh, man, this game's over. All of a sudden, this team's finding ways to come back and win games late. You know, they're just doing all the little things all of a sudden, and you have weird games like the other night, like Tyler O'Neill gets the walk-off hit by pitch with the bases loaded. Which, I mean, you need moments like that if you're going to win a championship. Teams win those kind of games, and they win those kind of series. And, you know, everything's going good right now. And, you know, they got to go out on the road and play better. You know, they're 4 games under .500 on the road, so you got to go to Arizona and try to play decent there. Arizona is not a good team, but they're playing better. I think they're 4 games over .500 since the All-Star break. So that's not going to be an easy series, although Arizona's got 2 lefties pitching the first of the series, so we're going to see a whole lot of Albert Pujols the next couple of nights. And then you've got a 5-game series in 4 days in Wrigley, and we all know we don't know what's going to happen in that series. But, you know, you need to win as many of these games as you can, because then next weekend you come home and you've got the Braves, which is going to be a really good test. And those games are already sold out. All three games against the Braves are sold out. So we're going to have big, big crowds and big, big excitement in Busch Stadium again next weekend.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, looking at the schedule, you've got a ton of winnable games. I mean, you've got the three against Arizona. You still have eight against the Cubs. You've got seven against Cincinnati, four against Washington, nine against Pittsburgh. Yeah, you've still got four against Milwaukee, three against San Diego, and three against L.A. But, you know, you've got games. I was looking at it. If both the Brewers and the Cardinals play 500 baseball, essentially, the rest of the way out, outside of their two matchups, Milwaukee has to win three of four just to tie the Cardinals, and the Cardinals still have the tiebreaker. So, you know, they're in a really, really good position. The Brewers definitely have a harder schedule, obviously, but the Cardinals still have to go out and do what they need to do, especially against the teams that they need to beat. And that the big one, like you said, is going to be that five-game set in Chicago next week. I mean, you saw my reaction when you said that they're going to Wrigley Field. I hate the Cardinals going to Wrigley Field, and I hate every time they go to Wrigley Field and they're on some sort of national broadcast. And I haven't looked at the schedule just yet, but I'm pretty sure a good portion of those are going to be on a national network, whether it's ESPN or something of that ilk. They just never play well. And I get a little trepidatious sitting there going, we got five against Chicago in Chicago in 4 days. Something doesn't feel right to me, and I'm a little worried.
Yeah, you just never know. I mean, we've seen them go up there in five-game series like that and struggle, and we've seen them in the last couple of years go up there and win five in a row in a five-game series. You know, the thing about it is you just never know, and you never know what the weather conditions are going to be, because that plays such a huge – has such a huge impact on how that series may play out. But you just got to keep winning. You know, and you talked about Cardinals having an easier schedule and the Brewers had such a – have a tougher one in the second half. Let's remember, it was the opposite the first half of the season, because the Cardinals, it felt like, were playing really good teams every day, and it seemed like the Brewers played the Pirates and the Reds for like 6 weeks straight. So, you know, it just happens that their schedules kind of flip-flop, that the Cardinals got the really tough part early and the Brewers kind of coasted through their first half and the second half kind of flip-flops. But hopefully the Cardinals still have to take advantage of it. You know, you still got to be able to beat the Pirates and the Reds. It's going to help, too, that Joey Votto is out for the rest of the year. You know, he's having surgery, so we won't get to see him, which is just a darn shame, because we all know that Joey Votto doesn't kill the Cardinals. Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. I'm excited. I'm ready for postseason baseball. I'm ready. You know,
you're ready for the bunting to come out.
I am. I'm ready for the bunting. I'm ready for the cool weather, and I'm excited for these playoffs. You know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how this new playoff format works. And the really fun part is, if the Cardinals win the division, you get all three games in that first series at Busch Stadium, which will be a huge advantage for the Cardinals. Like we said, they've played so much better at home than they have on the road. And right now it looks like we're playing – well, I mean, it's going to change a million times between now and then. Right now you're set up to play the Phillies, which I would definitely much rather play the Phillies in a three-game series, I think, than the Padres. Although, you know, the Juan Soto trade hasn't exactly worked out the way the Padres expected, and now that Fernando Tatis is – gone for the rest of the year and half of next year, the Padres have to just be looking at themselves and going, what the hell are we doing here? It's gonna be fun. I can't wait. It's gonna be a fun couple of months of baseball, and I'm looking forward to enjoying this ride, because it's gonna be magic watching Albert try to get 700. It's gonna be magic watching Yadi and Waino pass the pitching catching record. You know, something that's not getting talked about enough, after his grand slam today and has hit five total bases, Albert's only one base away from passing Stan Musial for second all-time in total bases in the history of baseball. I mean, just think about that. The fact that the number two guy all these years has been Stan, I mean, think about how long that stood. Stan Musial's been retired since 1963, you know, and he's still number two. And for Albert to be the guy that's going to pass him in St. Louis, that's going to be a special moment. And then, you know, like you said, you know, the countdown to 700 and watching him, as long as I think he's going to get to 700. I really want him to pass A-Rod. That's huge for me. I want him to get ahead of A-Rod, but I really do think he's going to get 10 or 11 in these next 45 games. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, you have to look at, you know, who he's going up against and if they're going to throw lefties and stuff like that. And I want to backtrack real quick. You mentioned Joey Votto, and it's very disappointing for me because my brother and I are actually going up to Cincinnati for that series in Cincinnati. We're going to be sitting front row for a couple of the games over there. And I'm like, man, I was really hoping to get a chance to see Joey Votto on the field and see what he brings to not just baseball, but his team and all that. Cause he is a guy that you watch when he's not playing you that you go, okay, a great hitter, a great ambassador for the game, somebody that really has fun on the field. And I'm going to miss seeing that, but maybe because of that, maybe we get to have some sort of interaction with him when he's maybe out there hanging out before the game.
You might, he'll be roaming around, I'm sure.
That he will. So, all right, let's break down this chase for 700 real quick, because you said, yeah, you think he's going to get to 10, maybe 11 more at this point to put him at 700 or 701. And this is going to actually be a bit of a two-part. We'll get to the second part in just a little bit, but let's break down a little bit about, you know, what is to come for him. We ran down who the Cardinals were playing: Arizona, Chicago, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Washington, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, San Diego, and LA. Going throughout his career, just looking at the amount of home runs that he's hit against some of these clubs, you obviously Chicago, Cincinnati, and Milwaukee are going to be up there because they're interdivision. 23 home runs in his career against Arizona, 57 against the Cubs, 22 against Atlanta, 47 against Cincinnati. Plus, he hit a lot of those at Great American Ballpark. So there's that. 24 against Washington, 52 against Pittsburgh, 45 against Milwaukee, 20 against the Dodgers, and 20 against the Padres. And looking at it, he actually has pretty favorable numbers as far as how many home run, you know, how many at bats it takes for him to get his next home run. You know, against Chicago, he gets a home run every 12 at bats. Against Atlanta, every 13.2 at bats. Against Washington, he hits a home run every 11 at bats. There's only one team in the rest of this stretch where he doesn't hit a home run at least every 16 at bats. And I'm actually not surprised by this. He only hits a home run every 20.6 at bats against the Dodgers. A, part because they don't play him as much, but B, they also had really, really good pitching. So you're looking at that. Are you surprised, A, that it's the Dodgers that he doesn't hit home runs a whole lot against? But is it more that, you know, he does hit home runs so frequently against these other teams?
Well, you know, like you said, part of the Dodger thing is the fact that, you know, he just didn't play them as often. And then historically, Dodger Stadium is not really a home run ballpark. It's a pitcher's ballpark. You know, the ball doesn't carry real well in Dodger Stadium, especially at night. You know, it's during the day, it carries a little better, but that marine layer in the evenings makes the ball not travel real well in Dodger Stadium. So that's part of that. And then, you know, the pitching, like you talked about. So that doesn't surprise me. But, you know, like you said, he's got some really favorable matchups in these next 45 games. You know, you look at going to Arizona this weekend, two pitchers, two lefties to start those first two games. And we know the ball flies in that ballpark. So you feel good about that. You feel like he goes to Chicago, he's probably going to hit one or two possibly in a five-game series in Wrigley. And then, like you said, he kills the ball. Nobody hits in Cincinnati and Pittsburgh like Albert Pujols does in their careers. And we know he does it in Milwaukee as well. So, you know, you look at those games and you go, okay, just those games right there, you feel like he could almost hit 10 just playing the divisional games on the road. So, I mean, I feel good about it. It's not going to be easy, like you said, because he's not going to play every single day. Although I think he's going to play – you know, he's definitely going to start against every left-hander, and then probably as soon as a left-handed pitcher comes into a game and can find a spot to stick him in the lineup to pinch hit for somebody, he's going to get in there and get swings. So I think he is probably going to play almost every day, at least having a bat one way or another. So, you know, I think he's got a real good shot at it. And the crazy thing, you think about it, we talked about his home runs per bat, he's only had 190 at-bats this year.
Yeah.
And he's got 11 home runs and 35 RBIs. If he's got 470 bats like Paul Goldschmidt does, I mean, I know he doesn't hit right-handers like he used to. But, you know, if he had those at bats, well, what are we talking about? He's probably already at 700 and, you know, 50 RBIs or 55 RBIs. So, I mean, he has definitely shown that he can hit right-handed batters lately. I mean, the numbers are not close. I mean, he's hitting like 380 against lefties. But he's gotten his average against righties up to about 250. So, you know, that's respectable. You know, if he's hitting 240, 250 against right-handers, you can make a case to throw him out there at least, you know, maybe not against every right-hander, but at least a couple of times a week because, again, you don't want to take bats away from Nolan Gorman in that DH spot either because Gorman is absolutely killing right-handed pitching right now.
Yeah, he really, really is. And it makes you sit back and go, okay – these other managers, these opposing managers, do they have any gamesmanship in themselves where they don't start a lefty against this team to try their best to avoid an Albert Pujols? But like you said, they're going to have to face a Nolan Gorman as well. So, I mean, is it just for these managers, it's just status quo? You just go with the rotation and really hope that your guys can get an aging Albert Pujols versus having to move the rotation around and throw a righty against an up-and-coming right-handed crusher and Nolan Gorman?
No, I mean, I don't think teams will mess with their rotations just because of Albert, because they're still going to believe they can get him out, which, you know, that's what we want them to believe.
Yeah, you should.
He's 42. You can get him. He doesn't look like he's 42 right now. He looks like old vintage Albert. You know, it's funny. You know, at that game on Sunday against the Brewers, and you go back to all the people that said, "Oh, this is just a nostalgia tour. This is just a chance for Albert to say goodbye. This is just a chance for the Cardinals to sell tickets." And you watch him hit that 3-run homer on Sunday, and he points to the dugout and does the Superman thing and rips his shirt. And, you know, it's just like, you know, that's the competitive Albert Pujols that we remember all those years. There's nothing, he's not taking anything for granted. Yeah, he's having fun, but this isn't just a goodbye. I'm saying goodbye, and this is just a fun send off. He's there. Don't think for a second, of the 25 guys on that team, that there's anybody who wants to win that division more than Albert Pujols does.
Oh, I don't doubt that in any way, shape, or form. And he's the leader in that clubhouse. He's still a leader in that clubhouse.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and this is a team that's full of leaders as well. So, I mean, that's the greatest thing, is you've got a bunch of guys that lead by example, but don't overpower in that leadership. And that's, I think, what is really making this team gel the way it is, and why they are not a team like the Padres, in a sense, to where, you know, you've got a bunch of guys trying to be in charge, but no one is listening to everybody else around them. Whereas with the Cardinals, at the very least, you know, the young guys know who to defer to, the older guys know who to defer to as well. And you're doing this with a manager that is younger than a handful of the players that are on this team as well. So you look at that, and you just go, okay, this might be a team that maybe they don't win it all this year, but they go on a deep run and set themselves up for the next couple of years as well. And yeah, it's not going to be fitting for this team to not win a championship in these guys last year. But if you get to the end of the season and you don't win a championship, but you go deep in the playoffs, do you still consider that a success?
Oh, I mean, it's still a success if you go deep. I mean, you look at this team now, and I know a lot of people will say, "Oh, well, they don't match up with this team or that team." But you look at it and you go, "I'm not sure right now." When you watch this team the way they're playing, I'm not sure that they don't match up. I mean, you know, and go back and we've talked about it. And, you know, it gets frustrating for me because I still hear people go, "Oh, well, they don't beat good teams." Well, look what they've done the last couple of weeks, and you can kind of almost go back to this team turning things around and start winning. When you go back to that series in Toronto, when you didn't have Goldie and Arenado, and you lose the first game, you know, 7-0, and then you go back in that second game and Wainwright pitches 8 innings and you win, and Albert has 4 hits and hits a 3-run homer, and you beat Toronto, and you can kind of look at there and see how this team has taken off since that, because you won that last game in Toronto, then you won 2 out of 3 against Washington, then you swept the Yankees, then you swept the Cubs. You know, then you lost 2 out of 3 in Colorado. Then you came home and won 2 out of 3 against Milwaukee. Then you swept Colorado. I mean, you know, they've been almost unbeatable since that Toronto series, since Albert kind of stepped up and said, "Oh, we don't have Goldie Arenado. Don't worry, I'll lead the team." And, you know, it's kind of like everybody's just fallen in line and followed. And, you know, we've talked about it 2 or 3 times. You look at their records against winning teams, and you can talk about it now. You know, they went 500 against the Blue Jays. They swept the Yankees. Yeah, they lost against Tampa, but we can go back to the fact that the first game of that series in Tampa, they should have won, and a guy named Drew Verhagen, who's not part of the team, had 2 outs in the 9th inning and gave up a 3-run homer. You know, so you should have won at least one of those games, and then who knows with the rest of that series. You know, you go back and you look at the Mets. Yeah, they have a losing record against the Mets, but Giovanni Gallegos blew 3 games in the 9th inning or extra innings in that series. Cardinals were winning a couple of those games. Look at the Dodgers series. You lost 2 out of 3, but you won one. And the second game, you were beating a pitcher that hadn't lost a game all year, and you're winning 6-0. And 2 pitchers who aren't on this team, in TJ McFarland and Drew Verhagen, blew that game. you know, the Padres. You swept the Padres. You're 3-0 against the Padres. I mean, you can make a case that this team has really played with all of those teams and should have winning records against the Mets and the Dodgers. You know, same thing with the Phillies. They had a game in Philadelphia. You know, they won 2 out of 3 in St. Louis. They lost 3 in Philadelphia, but 2 of those games the bullpen blew. You know, and it was guys that are not on this team anymore. So, I mean, you can look at it and say, you know, in a lot of ways, a pitch or two here, and they've got a really good record, and they've beaten everybody that they should have beaten. I mean, they've. It's not like anybody that – it's not like the Mets, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, any even Tampa. None of those teams blew the Cardinals away or made the Cardinals look like they didn't belong in those games. They were right there and should have won most of those games.
And you also look at that the team that we have now is not the same team that they had then. And same thing for the teams that you're playing as well. So it's, you know, you can't make that argument and not make it the other way. But, you know, just look at the Yankees, the way they have fallen off essentially since the Cardinals swept them. I mean, they haven't been very, very good. I mean, looking at it right now, they're 3-7 in their last 10 games. And yeah, their lead has shrunk to 10 games, but still, I mean, that's why you can't take a full measure of a team at a certain point and go, okay, that's the way this team is going to be at the end of the day. Same thing with the Cardinals, you know? Yeah, they struggle a little bit during the tougher parts of their schedule early on, but now they're doing what they need to do to win. They're taking advantage of the teams that they need to take advantage of, and they're doing what they're supposed to be. So it's a different team, and that's the beauty of the trade deadline and playing the season and bringing up call-ups and all that kind of stuff as well. You just don't know what team you're going to get going into the playoffs. And what's the age-old adage? Just get in and win, baby. I mean, get in and win. And we've seen this team countless times. You mentioned it at the very beginning of the show, a team that doesn't get talked about or seems to be one of the worst to get into the postseason is the one that usually goes on the run and wins, because they've been through the battles. They've been down at their lowest, and they've gelled as a team and came together to get to where they're supposed to go. And that's the team that goes on a run and wins a championship. And it's not just the Cardinals. It's not just the Blues. Countless teams you can look at that have won championships that you look back and you go, they're the ones that won. But then you look at the way they go about getting there, especially during the playoffs, and you go, yeah, that totally makes a ton of sense as to why that team got there. And this is a team that is right there in that mold. And it, in years past, you would say that, and you still had that trepidation of, yeah, but something's going to happen. I mean, there's still that this year, but I don't feel like there's a ticking time bomb on this team that they get into the playoffs and then boom, it's all over. Yeah, they may not win a World Series this year, but I don't think they're going to go out there and completely lay an egg based off of anything that I've seen this year.
No, and we haven't mentioned him, and you know, you can't count on anything, but I will say all the reports are more positive after 2 rehab starts now than they were at any point at any other time this year. He's going to get 2 more starts in the minor leagues, and then we'll see what happens. But if, you know, and we've talked about, you know, what a huge difference Jordan Montgomery has made, what a huge difference Jose Quintana has made. If somehow by the grace of God, you get to September, the end of September and the first part of October, and number 22 is able to walk out there and in some way, shape, or form pick up a ball and be able to start a ball game or come out of the bullpen and be some form of Jack Flaherty of 2019, 2020. I mean, that's a game changer. I mean, it truly is. If there's something there that he walks out and all of a sudden you can go into a series and have 4 starters in Flaherty, Wainwright, Michaelis, Montgomery, and then have Quintana and Dakota Hudson either in your bullpen or as your 5th and 6th starters if you need them, I'm going to feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, and Darkness says it perfectly. They did the one thing they desperately needed to do, and it was to fix the starting pitching. Nothing flashy, but improved vastly, and that's the same thing he did last year. It wasn't anything flashy. It wasn't anything sexy, but they got the guys that fit the mold and are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And, yeah, I mean, like you said, you don't want to count on Jack Flaherty coming back, but this whole running Jordan Hicks out for more than 1 inning, even though the numbers bear out that he should – only pitch an inning, because it seems like he gives up runs in that 2nd inning at the very least. And if you can slot him into 1 inning, if you can slot in Ryan Helsley into 1 inning, if you can get the right Giovanni Gallegos for an inning, then all of a sudden you shorten that game down to five or six innings for your starters. And that's what you're getting out of Montgomery and Quintana and Wainwright. For the most part, he's gone seven or eight a couple of times this year and he's looked great, but you don't want him going deep into the game if you can help it, because you need to save him for the rest of the year. Michaelis has gone seven or eight a couple of different times as well. But if you can get this to a five or six inning game, essentially, and you can throw out Flaherty, Hicks, Gallegos, and Helsley, 1, 2, 3, 4, all of a sudden it makes things so much better. And I don't want to rain on the Dakota Hudson parade, because I know you're a fan of Dakota Hudson. You think he's got a lot of potential, and I still think he can pitch relatively well. But I just don't want to see Dakota Hudson on a playoff roster. I don't. It's nothing against him, but nothing I've seen this year has made me go consistently, I would like to see him out there, even if it's just for an inning out of the bullpen. I just, the speed with which he works doesn't fit what this team needs, and it doesn't fit what he has shown to be successful. When he pitches faster, he's a successful pitcher. But when things slow down, things go haywire. And if he can rectify that in the coming weeks, different story. I just don't see that being the case for him this year.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I think he'll be on the roster in some capacity.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know how much he'll pitch in the postseason because, again, you know, you're only going to go with four starters, and then you're going to have, you know, a guy like Quintana in your bullpen that can eat up innings. And, you know, I'm not sure how big of a role there will be, you know, for Dakota Hudson. You know, there's a lot of talk that they want to try to get Zach Thompson back up here and get him established in this bullpen before we get to postseason, which would be another big piece. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The other thing that I'm really curious to see, and I'm surprised that it hasn't happened yet, I'm wondering when we see Alec Burleson, because I still think he could be a piece that could help this team, because you still have a lot of questions about your outfield on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I like Lars Nubar, and I know Nubar is a huge fan favorite, but I'm still not convinced that he's an everyday ball player. You know, I think he's best served when he is that fourth outfielder and can move around a little bit. I mean, he had a home run, had a couple of hits today, but he'd been 0 for his last 15 before that. You know, I think he's better when he's just playing sporadically and is kind of a defensive replacement and gets a start here or there. So that's a question. But you've got to get more consistency out of Tyler O'Neill and Dylan Carlson as well. But, you know, with Burleson's power potential, I'd like to see him get a little bit of a crack. And then, two, at some point here in the next week or so, we're going to see Juan Yepes come back, which, you know, that's another guy who's a consistent bat. He's got some power and he can hit for average, and you're going to find him some playing time, I would imagine, down the stretch as you try to keep this offense rolling. And, you know, hopefully Tyler O'Neill and Dylan Carlson, you know, they've both kind of gotten hot here in the last few days. So that would be huge, because if Tyler O'Neill could get on a run and we could have a September like he had last year, you know, that would be huge for this ball club. And Carlson just needs to be consistent, you know, and that makes this team so much better if those guys are rolling.
It really, really does. All right, let's jump back. We kind of strayed away from the Albert Pujols talk and the chase for 700. But there were two things that I wanted to still discuss about it real quick. First off, we both feel he's going to get there. When do you think it happens? Do you have a date in mind? Do you have a stretch where you go, okay, it's going to happen right here? Is it going to take to the final week, or do you feel like maybe it happens a little bit earlier, maybe that second to last week or something like that? What's your feel of when Albert's going to possibly crack 700?
You know what? I haven't really sat down and looked at the schedule and going, okay, here's a date. But I will say their last six games are in Pittsburgh. Oh. If there's some place that he probably – it's kind of fitting that he would do it other than Busch Stadium, it might be Pittsburgh, because, my God, he's hit a lot of home runs in that ballpark.
That is, yeah. Finally, you got three here in St. Louis, and then three to wrap up the season in Pittsburgh. That's kind of what I was looking at too. I feel like maybe he gets, he collects a cluster here in the next couple of weeks. You know, like you said, against, you know, Arizona, Chicago, that the likes of that, and then yeah, he gets hit hard a little bit with some of the better teams, especially the Padres and the Dodgers. Darkness thinks he gets it during that Red Series, the 15th through the 18th. It's very possible he can collect a couple in Cincinnati at the end of this month as well and really put himself in a good spot to maybe do that. But I think I'm more along the lines with you, Scott, in the fact that it's not that he's going to draw it out to that point, but I think just the way things are going to line up, it will probably be in that six-game stretch against the Pirates. And it would be a really, really fitting way, like you said, to kind of wrap up the season in a sense, at least the regular season, for him to kind of knock that out of the way and go from there. But this is kind of where the next question comes in. And it's something that's kind of been floated out there a little bit in the last couple of days. And it's not, it really doesn't pertain just to Albert as well. And we know that Albert and Yadi have kind of both initiated the fact that this is their last season. Wainwright hasn't necessarily come out and flat out said it is, but is there any reason that you can think of that any or all of these three might give it one more ride next year?
I don't think so. I mean, I know a lot of Cardinal fans are saying, oh man, why wouldn't he come back? You know, especially if he doesn't get to 700, this year, come back and do it next year. You know, it looks so good. But listening to Albert, I don't think Albert thinks he can do it again. I think he's put everything he had into getting ready for this year and coming home and just putting it all on the line and trying to win and trying to do all of these things one last time in St. Louis. I'm just not sure he's going to have anything left when this season's over. I think he got himself so mentally and physically prepared to make a run this year that I think he just said, I'm going to put it all out there. And when it's done, it's done. And people have asked him that, you know, Alexa Dad asked him that the other day. Katie Wu's asked him that in the last week. And he's pretty much said, no, this is it. You know, even if I don't get to 700, if I hit 699, even I'm not coming back because I just don't think physically I can do it next year. And so I think he's put it all out there. And I think this is it. Same thing with Yadi. I mean, Yadi's body is breaking down as much as we don't want to believe it. And we saw it. He had to take the time away and go to Puerto Rico. That knee's in pretty bad shape. Yadi goes through a lot just to get himself onto the field every day now. And same thing, you know, he came out at the beginning of the season and said, you know, this is it. I'm going to have as much fun as I can, and I'm done, you know. And you look at all the games Yadi's played and all the things that Yadi's put his body through. Same thing. And Yadi's not the same player. You know, he's definitely not the same hitter this year that he has been the last few years. His body's worn down. He still can do it defensively, though. We saw him throw out a guy today at second base by a mile. You know, he's still got the arm, but I don't think that Yadi either has enough left in the tank for another year. I think they planned it. I think this was it. Waino, I think, probably comes back. Waino may never retire. Of the three of them, I think he's still got the most left. You know, and part of that is the fact that he is a starting pitcher, and I'm not trying to take away from anything that all the work that pitchers put into it, because they put in a lot more than just pitching every 5 days. But he does get that break of a couple of days a week where he doesn't have to do a whole lot, that his body can kind of recover. You know, plus, you know, Waino had a couple of years there that he's missed where his body, you know, kind of broke down on him, and he was able to kind of save some bullets because he missed, you know, most of 15 because of the Achilles, and he missed most of 11 because of Tommy John. And so I think he's got a little bit left, and I would be shocked, honestly, if he doesn't come back next year. You know, I mean, again, I think it's Cardinals or nothing. I don't see him. You know, I've heard people say, oh, maybe he goes to Atlanta or something. I don't think he does that. I think if the Cardinals want him back and he wants to pitch, I think he's the one who there's probably a 60% chance that Waino is back pitching for the Cardinals next year. But yeah, Yadi and Albert, no, I don't think there's any chance that either one of them are back next year.
And Albert would have to get back all those presents that he got this year from.
Well, they both would. Yadi's got them too.
It's true. So yeah, they'd have to give up back all those gifts and then have to do it all over again. I totally get it. And, you know, you'd look at Albert and he would be the first one to tell you that, you know, if he didn't get to 700, there's a reason. God's got a reason why he wouldn't have made it to 700. And God's the reason why he's back with St. Louis and doing what he's doing this year. So he trusts in his faith, and there's a reason. And if this is the last year for him, he knows that it's the last year for him. He's going to go out doing what he can do and wants to do. And then after that, it's over. And I don't think it's the last time you're going to see him in a Cardinal uniform. I know, because obviously there's fantasy camp and there's the Hall of Fame that he's going to get into and all that stuff. And at some point, I wouldn't be shocked if you see him as part of some sort of coaching group. I don't know if he'll be in the Cardinal dugout as a coach per se, but he's definitely going to have some role with the Cardinals organization when he's done, because I just don't see how he can't, because he has such baseball knowledge. You see what he's done for guys like Awan Yepez and some of these other kids on this team that the Cardinals would be insane if they didn't keep these guys within the organization. And I think they all know that.
The only question I have about Albert, and I agree with you, at some point he will be back in the Cardinal organization. The only question I have with Albert is, how does that 10-year service contract with the Angels still work? I kind of think that they kind of voided that when they left, but I haven't officially heard that. But yeah, no, I mean, both of those guys, Albert and Yachty, you know, they may be done and we'll never see them on the field officially, but both of them are going to be in St. Louis a lot. You know, number five and number four's pictures will be on the wall in left field. Their numbers are going to be hanging on the wall. There'll be statues outside the ballpark. You know, we're going to see them in a lot of car caravans for a lot of years. And they'll be around. You know, they'll be working with guys. I'm sure Yachty will be in spring training some. You know, although Yachty's got so many other things that he's involved with in Puerto Rico with his basketball team and his record label and everything else. But I'm sure that he will find his way to spring training. And, you know, and Albert still lives in St. Louis. You know, he's got residences in St. Louis and Kansas City. And, you know, he's not going to go back to the Dominican. Albert's going to be here. You know, his kids are all here. He's going to be around and we'll see him a lot with the Pujols Family Foundation and everything. And so, you know, Albert, you'll probably see at the ballpark a lot next year, I would imagine. You know, it would be interesting. I mean, I know he won't do it full time, but Albert and Jim Edmonds be fun on the radio together, on TV together every once in a while.
I think if you go to social media, I think social media would explode if those two were in a booth together calling a game, because Jimmy Ballgame's been getting a lot of heat this season from people. And I don't
understand that. You know, I mean, I know a lot of people think, oh, he talks about himself too much. But, you know, Dan McLaughlin kind of puts him in that situation because he asks him to break things down and tell him what he sees and describe it to how he would do things. And so he does what he kind of responds to what Danny asks him to do.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's the breakdown of things. I think it's the extracurricular stuff that happens around it that, I mean, everybody's got something for their broadcast. I mean, every broadcaster, whether it's a play-by-play person or a color analyst, they all have something that's different about the way they go about talking in a game. It just so happens that fans don't like what Jim Edmonds talks about outside of breaking down the game. And, you know, it's a fair point. I'm not going to say it's not a fair point, because there are some moments that you go, oh, really? But I think you get that with everybody and in any sport on any broadcast. I mean, how much crap has Joe Buck gotten for the stuff that he does? And, you know, not everybody is going to be everybody's cup of tea when it comes to listening to a game. So there are other options. I mean, there's the radio. Yes, some people may not like some of the guys that are on the radio as well. Yes, they may not listen like the game that's being called by Danny Mac and Jim Edmonds. But you know what? You can always mute it, and you can always call the game yourself. You know, if you don't like what's being discussed on the game, you know what? Just mute it and enjoy the product that's on the field. You know, just do that. And if you really don't like it, then broadcast your own games. See how easy it is.
That's true. You know, it's funny though. People rip Jim Edmonds, but then Brad Thompson gets on there, and people are just as vicious about BT as well. And it's going to be interesting because Dan McLaughlin is starting to get groomed for Camo X. He's doing more and more radio, and I think that's the future of Dan McLaughlin in the next few years, is to move over to Camo X, which will be really interesting. Which is where he, of course, started. You know, his biggest career was at Camo X, learning under Jack Buck, and it'll be interesting to see if he does make that transition, who transitions to TV as the play-by-play guy.
Well, I mean, there's some guys that you could put out there. I mean, I don't know. There's a couple.
Yeah, there's a couple floating around. We'll see. But it is interesting. Although Jimmy was on the radio the other day, which he didn't seem to enjoy a whole lot. But he did do a couple innings on radio. So it'll be interesting. Speaking of Joe Buck, he was in the ballpark last night with his family, which was good to see. I mean, Joe's got season tickets and is there quite often, but he had his whole family there last night. And old Mr. Freeze was at the ballpark last night as well, sitting down by the dugout and being pelted by gum by Adam Wainwright.
By gum. I mean, you gotta love the fact that's, you know, that camaraderie is still there. And I talk about this a countless amount of times. You know, St. Louis isn't the only city that this happens in. There's lots of franchises that have history and camaraderie and guys that, you know, throughout the decades stay in contact and all that. There's still celebrations, but for just in St. Louis, there's just a different feel. And yes, I am biased 100%. I will 100% admit it. I'm born and raised here. I grew up a Blues and a Cardinals fan, but there is just something different about the feel of St. Louis and the franchises that are here and the people that played for them and the guys that stay here, stay in contact, stay friends, stay committed to the community. And even the ones that don't still live here, but still have connections. Kurt Warner is a perfect example. He doesn't live here, but he still comes back and does so many things for the St. Louis area that it makes you sit there and go, I am proud to be from this area. Yeah, there's a crap ton of things that we aren't proud of as far as being St. Louisans, but there are some really, really cool things that we should be proud of. And I think at least over the last 5 years, a lot of that has been on display nationally. I mean, you see with the Cardinals playoff runs and the special events that were here as far as baseball is concerned. You had the Stanley Cup run, the All-Star game, the Winter Classic, everything that the Blues have done. You're starting to see the focus of the soccer world coming into St. Louis as well with what they're building over there at City SC and what Lutz is bringing in from across the sea as well. And yeah, you can say the NFL doesn't really look at us, but I'm pretty sure with what's going on XFL related that the NFL has tabs on that. They know what's going on here. And St. Louis may never accept the NFL again, but I think the NFL knows what they're missing by not being here. So there's a ton of things that people should be proud of when it comes to being from St. Louis. And we can bitch and moan all we want about how much athletes get paid and if it's in relation to the people that are working in, you know, first responders and teachers and things like that, that don't get that same kind of money. I think what the athletes that are from St. Louis and are in St. Louis, what they do kind of makes you go, okay, the money aside, they are blue collar people and they build this city up as much as they possibly can. And we should be proud of it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like you said, the Blues do the same thing. I can tell you right now that Patty Maroon has been in Busch Stadium a ton the last couple of weeks, almost every night. Pat Maroon's been roaming around the ballpark. So, you know he's
still- I can just see, you just walk in the concourse of Busch Stadium and you just hear Pat Maroon almost like a ghost coming through the concourse. He's almost like a legend or a ghost story of some sort. And you turn a corner and there's just Pat Maroon.
Except Pat Maroon's not quiet enough to be a ghost. Pat Maroon's kind of like a Clydesdale stomping through the concourse. You definitely know when he's around, but it's cool to see him around. He's been there a lot the last week or so. So that's cool. And a lot of the Blues, Ryan O'Reilly was in town the other night and was at the Cardinal game. You know, they're in and out, which is very cool to see that the Cardinals and Blues have that relationship that they have where the players are there all the time and vice versa with the Cardinals going to Blues things. And so, you know, that's really good. And I'm sure, like you said, that'll build with the soccer team and, you know, hopefully the XFL. And, you know, and like you said, Kurt still does a lot. Isaac Bruce still does a lot in St. Louis. Torrey Holt, Orlando Pace. You know, so even though there's not a football team in St. Louis anymore, a lot of those guys still live here. I mean, Orlando Pace, Adam Timmerman, a bunch of those guys still live in St. Louis and are around and doing things in the community. So it is definitely a city where, you know, people come back or they never leave. You know, Ted Simmons is at the ballpark constantly now, which is so cool to see, you know, and just, you know, all those guys, to see all those guys from the 82 team back over the weekend and see how much it meant for them to be back in the ballpark and see the fans react to them and them react to the crowd was just really cool. And just another reminder of how special the Cardinal legacy is, but just sports in general in St. Louis and how fans don't forget their players and the players don't forget the fans.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest things about all of it is that right there. You know, they don't forget each other and they look out for each other and they respect each other, which is a really Midwestern thing, essentially. I mean, I think that's the thing that gets missed when you're talking about us being flyover states, is that there's just something different about this Midwest bias in a sense that it gets lost. And I think that's why players that come here are drawn to stay here. not just in St. Louis, but in the Chicagos and the Nashvilles and Milwaukees and Minnesotas and things of that nature. There's just a different feel. I wouldn't say it's slow paced, but it's definitely more of a home type feel versus an East and West Coast. And there's nothing wrong with the East and West Coast, but you look at it and it's like the East and West Coast, you want to visit the coasts and you want to live in the Midwest. That's really what it comes down to.
Yep. It's a special place for sure.
It is. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the other stuff going on in the world of sports right now. We got a couple minutes before we get out of here. First off, the Deshaun Watson saga continues. Now he's been suspended for 11 games and fined $5 million. We've talked about this countless times about how this is just not right in a sense, in more ways than one, because a lot of the truth hasn't come out, but a lot of the non-truth also hasn't come out. The way things were supposed to go, they didn't go that way. The way you thought it was supposed to go, it did, but it didn't. There's just a whole, it's just a really a mess. And the fact that the Cleveland Browns are involved in all this again now and having to pay another quarterback that's not going to play for a long amount of time. There's just something about this whole thing that just makes you go, why?
So wait, you're telling me that the NFL and the legal system don't work the way they're supposed to, and there's crookedness and unhonesty? I'm shocked.
I can see that the shocked look on your face makes me think, oh, you've never heard of this before.
No, I'm amazed that things like this go down. I thought that everything was on the up and up when it came to the legal system and professional sports. What I'm really excited to see is, will the Browns go get Jimmy G? Because I want to see how many quarterbacks you can pay for one season.
because they're paying in week one. We talked about this before. In week one, they're paying a quarterback to beat them in Baker Mayfield.
I mean, right now you're paying Baker Mayfield, Deshaun Watson, Jacoby Brissett, Josh Rosen. I mean, you might as well bring Jimmy G in. There's going to be somebody else out there that, you know, needs some money that hasn't played. I mean, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you want to come back for a little while? there's got to be a couple of quarterbacks that have retired in the last few years that, you know, there's an old Charger quarterback that has like 36 kids. He could probably use some money to sit around for a while and do something. I mean, why not? Let's just pay them all. Let's just pay like 90% of our salary this year to quarterbacks that can't play.
I mean, that would be completely in the Browns' MO. I mean, what was it? How many years in a row did they draft a quarterback? And there was the one guy that had the jersey that listed every quarterback since, you know, the mid-90s to play for that team, and it took up two columns on the back of his jersey.
Oh, my God, yeah. It would take the rest of the show to try to name them all.
Oh, Tim Couch. The days of Tim Couch.
Oh, yeah. Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn.
Oh, man. Yeah, so Cleveland Browns fans, including Scott, because I know you are a Browns fan in one way, shape, or form, we pray for you. We hope that someday you find a NFL-worthy quarterback. But just take solace in the fact that even though it may be a crappy team, you still have an NFL team. So go out there, dog pound, enjoy it. You know, imbibe responsibly while you're there. But definitely you have to drink in order to watch a Browns game this year, probably.
You know what's crazy is that that's actually a really good team. When you look at that roster, they got a really good team if they have a quarterback. And when I joke about Jimmy G, I'm half serious, because it really wouldn't shock me if Jimmy Garoppolo is up in Cleveland this year.
Are you surprised? I mean, speaking of, you know, quarterbacks being moved around Seattle, are you surprised they haven't? I mean, I know it's interdivision and all that, but are you surprised that they didn't maybe make a play for Jimmy G or really even go after anybody else? Because, I mean, Drew Lock is, as much as we are happy to see former Mizzou Tigers try to be successful, I just don't think he's going to pan out. I mean, they're going with Geno Smith right now. I mean, Geno Smith in Seattle. I just – Drew Lock, how has Seattle not made a move?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't. I don't see Drew Lock being the starting quarterback there all season. You know, obviously San Francisco doesn't want to trade Jimmy G. If he ends up getting released, then maybe Seattle gets involved. you know, I guess it's just a case where Seattle is ready to just kind of rebuild and maybe not totally tank, but they're probably looking at next year's draft going, okay, there's six or seven quarterbacks in the first round potentially next year. You know, we're just going to bide our time and, you know, do what we can this year and get ready for next year in the future. That's kind of the way I look at what Seattle must be thinking.
Well, I mean, you have to sit there and think you're competing against the Rams and essentially the Cardinals. And right now they've got a couple of receivers, and that's about it. They have no running game to speak of. I mean, they haven't had a running game since Marshawn Lynch was there, obviously. The defense has become old and broken down. They're trying to revamp that as well. So it makes total sense to sit there and go, okay, we know we can't compete with the top two teams in our division. So why not, like you said, go out there, start kind of almost like a – medium-sized rebuild, in a sense. Not a soft rebuild, not a hard rebuild, but like right there in between where, yeah, you're competitive in some games, you're getting some guys some reps and things like that, but you're really trying to get into that sweet spot of the draft where you get the quarterback that you're looking for, and maybe a couple other guys too. You know, maybe it's a matter of, hey, yeah, we lost a bunch of games, we got the second or third overall pick, but the guy we want maybe falls to 9 or 10. You trade back, pick up a couple picks, still get your guy and rebuild from there. I mean, it's definitely a plan going forward for sure. With their Pete Carroll up there, I still think that's a better option for them is to try and rebuild, because he's a guy that can build a team. He has shown that he can be a part of building a team up there. And that's not the same thing for, you know, like the Jets, in a sense. The Jets team will never be able to build a team regardless of who's there right now. And obviously, Zach Wilson got injured in his first preseason game. He's going to be out a couple weeks. You know, you look at it and you just go, okay, Seattle's probably got going the right way. The Jets, not so much.
Yeah, the Jets just can't get out of their own way. You know, I'm still not sure what Zach Wilson is. You hope that he gets healthy enough that he gets out there and you can kind of get a better idea of if he is potentially the future with the Jets. But we'll have to wait and see. I'm going to make a prediction real quick, though, and we'll be doing our NFL previews pretty soon because the season's right around the corner. The team that I think is going to surprise people, and I'm not saying they're going to win their division or that they're going to go to the playoffs, but the team that I would not sleep on if I'm an NFL fan is an AFC team and it's an AFC South team. I think the team that's going to surprise a whole lot of people this year is the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think Jacksonville, I'm serious. I see you laughing.
Okay.
It would not surprise me at all to see Jacksonville win 9 games.
I mean, yeah, you're going to have to sell me a little bit harder when we do our previews on that one because obviously Houston's going to be terrible. Indianapolis is going to be middle of the road. Tennessee, I think, is still a team that is still the team to beat in the South. And I know you say they're not going to win the division or anything like that. I just – the AFC is stacked. The AFC is loaded. And for Jacksonville to win 9 games, I mean, I got to look at their schedule real quick. I mean, Chargers are going to be tough. They're playing the Giants. Okay. Broncos, maybe a tough matchup there. Raiders are going to be tough. Chiefs are going to be tough. Ravens are going to be tough. Titans again. Cowboys, who knows, toss up. 9 might be a stretch, but I wouldn't say that they're not going to be the worst team, I don't think. If I'm looking at it, and if you want a team to be surprised about, and a team that I think could not win their division, but could be pretty good. Watch out for the Lions. I like the Lions a little bit this year. I mean, I haven't watched Hard Knocks, but I've heard really good things from people that have seen it. And their head coach is a guy that, you know, the last 2 years you've really seen him digging his heart and soul into it. Yes, they got Jared Goff at quarterback, and that scares the hell out of a lot of people. But they're also a team that looks like, just like we talked earlier, a team that has gone through the battles and has come together a little bit. I could see them maybe putting a little bit of a run on and having a pretty good year, and watch, they'll win 1 game this year. But you know what? Hey, it's the Lions. The Detroit fans come to expect that.
The NFC North is going to be such a train wreck. The Bears are going to be awful. Minnesota could be okay. You know, it's going to come down to how consistent Kirk Cousins plays. They could be okay. I'm with you with the Lions. I don't think they're going to win a ton of games, but I think they're on the right path. So I think the Lions are a team that can win 6, 7, 8 games. I think they can be in that range. The team that I think, you know, and people are going to say, oh, they're going to win, they're the NFC champs. They're the... Dude, I think the Green Bay Packers are just a damn train wreck. I mean,
I know you hate them more because you're a Cowboys fan.
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It totally has to do with the douchebag playing quarterback in Green Bay who's, you know, doing he's experimenting and trying to find out what true love is and being touched by the 100 hands of his ancestors. And have you heard all that crap come out of his mouth?
I have not. I've kind of steered away from the Aaron Rodgers talk. And honestly, I just look at him strictly as a fantasy quarterback, and that's all I'm going to do. Because, yeah, the rest of it's madness.
No, he's out doing hallucinogens and talking about it and trying to be forgiven by his ancestors and trying to find out what true love is. And, yeah, all his wide receivers suck and he doesn't trust any of them. He threw that out this week. It's going to be a nightmare in Green Bay, man. It's not going to be pretty.
I'm definitely looking forward to going through these predictions and seeing how we both feel some of these – teams end up at, because there could be some really, really interesting thoughts going forward when we do our preview here in a couple of weeks. Another quick note, more so a congratulations. Obviously, the college season is getting underway. We're going to be seeing college football here very, very shortly. We've got a lot of great local products being put on the field. I mean, obviously, SLU and their soccer program has been huge. Their basketball program is going to be really good this year. They're over in Europe right now. You've got Mizzou competing in the SEC once again this year. So many other great schools doing what they're doing. But this is, once again, completely biased because I go there. But I have to give a big-time shout-out to the Lindenwood women's soccer team. They opened their first ever season of Division I soccer tonight. They played SIUC over in Carbondale, the Salukis, and took them down 2-0 to earn their first ever Division I victory. So congratulations the Lindenwood women's soccer team. I'll be doing PA for their first ever Division I home game on Sunday. So make sure you come out and check out their game there. And yeah, you'll hear my voice, unfortunately, for you, but you get to watch a good soccer game, I'm sure. But just wanted to shout out to them. They get their OVC season started here very soon. So very excited to see what Lindenwood brings, but also very excited to see what these other schools bring. Cause the women, the Billikens soccer team, the women's team was playing Arkansas tonight. Last I checked, they were up 1-0 over Arkansas. I'm sorry, I failed to get the final score, but, I'm pretty sure that they ended up winning that game as well. But, I'm going to do a quick check for you. Yep, they did. They beat the Razorbacks 1-0. So once again, soccer alive and well here in St. Louis.
Good to hear. Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to Lindenwood on that first win. Congratulations to you on the PA thing. I'm sure you will do wonderful on Sunday. And also good luck to all the high school kids, because high school sports get underway here in the next couple of weeks as well. We'll have high school football getting fully underway next weekend, which is crazy to think that Friday Night Lights high school football version starts next week, which I'll be doing a lot of that stuff too, as well as all my fun Cardinal stuff. So looking forward to that and college football. I'm anxious to see what Mizzou looks like. And it's going to be a fun next couple of months with football getting underway and down the stretch of baseball and soccer and hockey and everything else starting to kick up. So it's going to be a fun fall as we head down the stretch towards the end of 2022. Can you believe we're already saying that?
I mean, I remember when we hit the pandemic and we transitioned to what we're doing right now, and we weren't sure how long it was going to last. We weren't sure if it was even going to work. And yet now it seems that we were, as Tom Ackerman said, we were on the cutting edge of this. We were one of the first, at least that he can think of, that did something along this line. And the fact that we're still able to do it, and I wouldn't say inspired the rest of the country and the rest of sports networking to do this. It's nice to sit back and go, 2 years into this and we are still doing what we want to do. We're continuing to grow what we want to do in the future. And we're doing it in a city that welcomes everybody that wants to do it and promotes and supports and uplifts anybody that wants to be in this field. And the connections that we've been able to make with the people that we've been able to make and the franchises and the radio stations and the networks that we've been able to make connections with, it's been really, really humbling. And hopefully for the both of us, we're getting ready to once again maybe take another step into a bigger picture. And we definitely want to bring you guys along with us in that. And that's why we want you to follow our social media pages. We try to do our best to promote everything we possibly can. You know, we're going to do our best to start putting out, you know, weekly, you know, college sports and where to find them, and high school sports and where to find them, because we can't do what we like to do without the athletes out there doing what they love to do, and they can't do what they love to do unless they have support. And if you guys go out and support them, they can support us. We can support them by supporting you, by supporting us. And it's just a great big circle of life when it comes to sports. So we can't thank you guys enough for the support you've given us. And hopefully we can reciprocate the favors.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said that any better myself. I do, before we go away, I do want to say one thing, and it's kind of a downer. We talk about all the people in radio that we all know and respect, and St. Louis lost a great one this past week. We lost somebody that I consider somewhat of a friend. Was always very nice to me whenever I got the chance to see him in Eureka or talk to him. And, you know, he was more than willing to do this show. Unfortunately, he got sick and things didn't do exactly what we wanted to, but we lost the great Jeff Burton, who I know Wags and I grew up listening to on the point, as a lot of people in St. Louis did. Jeff was there in the mornings. He was there in the afternoons and back there in the mornings the last couple of years on the Rizzuto show. And just a great guy. He was a nice person. He would talk to anybody. He was, when you saw him, he acted like he'd known you forever. And there's not too many people out there like Jeff Burton. And again, St. Louis lost a good one. I know I'm going to miss him. I know Wags is going to miss him as well. And to Jeff's family, all the people at the point, everybody in St. Louis, man, we feel your pain, because radio won't be the same without Jeff.
No, it will not. And, you know, he's an inspiration, not just for people in general because of the way he treated people and acted. For me, and like you said, you got to know him a little bit more personally because of your interactions with him. I only got to have really one interaction with him, and it wasn't even in face-to-face, it was through emails. You know, Jeff suffered from Crohn's disease, and I did it. I do as well. And back in the days of him on the show with Tom and Jeff, you know, I reached out to him, and this is at the beginning of me going back to school and really getting back into broadcasting, really for a passion. And to be able to reach out to him and just say, hey, thank you for doing what you're doing, because it shows that I can do it as well. And for him to take the time to write back and just send along a nice note of, hey, keep doing what you're doing and keep your head up. It just is a testament to what Jeff Burton is as a person. And yeah, he's no longer with us, but I think we all need to take his inspiration and use that to base our lives off of just treating people with respect and really just being honest to goodness, good people.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yes, I echo your sentiments to the whole point staff, Hubbard Radio, Jeff's family, everybody in St. Louis. Just hug your loved ones a little tighter tonight. Say a prayer for those that you may not even say a prayer for. And just go out there and take Jeff Burton's inspiration and sprinkle it throughout the world. For Scott, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. We'll be back sometime in the next week or so with some more Toasted Tavern talk, some more sports talk, and hopefully you'll hear more of us on the mics here in the next couple of months as well. So have a great night. Enjoy your weekend, and go Cardinals.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.